Laws don't govern. Men do. The same men who governed before are here now in that room. They have his ear. They've got to be cleaned out.
First, the land must be given back.
And if Mother Earl doesn't do it?
Yes.
Then he's an enemy, too.
You're his emissary, his officer, his friend.
I'm a friend to no one and to nothing except logic.
Yeah, I'm a friend of no one and nothing but logic. That's a good rule to go by, boys and girls. Hey, what is today? This is Tears Day. The 11th, right? The 11th of July, 2017. And we're ready to go. Are you ready to listen? Well, I see they're going at it again at each other, the Democrats and the Republicrats. I love it. I hope they destroy and mangle each other. Yeah, I hope the Trumpites and the Democrazies tear each other to pieces. Yeah, the chaos factor. There's all kinds of articles out there people write about lone wolves. And they really know nothing about lone wolves. They know a little bit of this and a little bit of that. They certainly don't know anything about us or our philosophy or our ideas and what we're thinking. They don't. They would talk about it if they did. All they talk about is the old dead right wing. Dead right wing racist Hollywood races. That's all over, boys and girls. It was over in the 70s. I just didn't quite understand it. You know that great book, Siege, by James Mason? I should have wrapped it up right there and changed courses. I did somewhat. I tried. But the people are not ready for it, weren't ready for it. They should have been ready for it. It was really almost too late for it. But that was the way it should have been done. With a few changes. But it's going to happen, and it's not going to happen because of the right wing or the so-called white supremacists. Racists are going to have a lot to do with it, but certainly not altogether. There's all kinds of factions going to be in this thing. And as long as we can keep these Republicans and Democrats and conservatives tearing each other to pieces, that's duck soup for me. This whole situation's got to be broken up into little pieces, small pieces, smaller than 50 states. Yeah. Well, I see Ivanka Trump, the great white lady, has baked a traditional Purim hamachin with her kids ahead of a Jewish festival. Ahead of Purim, Ivanka Trump shares a photo on Instagram of her family baking hamachin, triangular cookies traditionally eaten on the Jewish holiday. And of course that holiday was to celebrate the genocide of the Persian people. Yeah, Jews like to celebrate things like that. So I don't see if they're going to celebrate that. I guess even the Hollywood Nazis may not have the balls to celebrate the H word. Well, Jews have celebrated murdering people by the thousands, by the millions, down through the ages. Why not celebrate their H word? I'll tell you. What kind of cookies are we going to have? What kind of cookies are we going to have? Actually, this is the most overtly radical pro-Jewish and pro-Israel president and family, I think, than we've ever had, including Hillary. Just can't go along with these right-wing conservative racial types because they're insane. They go along with their worst enemies. They think they're going to deliver them just because they pat them on the head a little bit. Trump talking about saving Western civilization. Too bad it's not true. I mean, too bad he's not true. Too bad it's just another capitalista piece of shit talk. Don't let them fool you. It's all being manipulated. And most people will fall into the trap. I had to take my lady to the doctor for an eye exam today, and I ended up sitting in the car with the air conditioner on, listening to Rush Gumball. He was about having a, if that guy don't have a coronary and slump over the desk dead one of these days, I'll kiss your ass. It's amazing how these Republicans and Democrats can get so excited over a fixed game that I guess some of them don't even realize it's fixed. But they get on the radio and they go absolutely livid, man. Crazy. Going on and on about whether Trump Jr. gave secrets or agreed to the Russians and so forth. Whether he met with a spy or whether she wasn't a spy. It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. Tickles me to hear the progressives go on and on about Russia. All of a sudden they're super war hawks against Russia. Back in the few decades past, they were all wanting to make peace all the time with Russia. Now they want to make war with Russia. I asked those liberals once one thing. Why wouldn't you have condemned the fact that in the Civil War the Russians sent their Pacific Fleet to San Francisco and their Atlantic Fleet to New York City to guard Abraham Lincoln, the dictator's war? Yeah, I hope you know that. That happened. And if it hadn't happened, the South would have won. So, maybe we do have a reason not to like Russia. Yeah, if the Ruskies hadn't sent those fleets over here to guard the coast of the United States, because England was about ready to jump into it on the side of the South. If we hadn't have done that, I think there'd been a lot of blacks in trouble. Again, going back again, do I have to do it again, Mazza? Yeah, nothing's changed, boy. Except you're getting on this goddamn leaky boat and going back to Africa or wherever you came from. They will even give you some money to resettle someplace, but just get the hell out of here. Of course, the greedy white guys, and we got plenty of them, they didn't want to leave control of that black labor. So they may have gotten away from chattel slavery, but they put them right back into wage slavery, moved them north and displaced thousands of white guys in the plants in the north. They made everybody a wage slaver. You should ask your friendly Christian down the block what he thinks of these Jews celebrating the genocide and annihilation of a people, the Persians. They do it every year. Do it every year. Nobody ever says shit except people like me. Well, anyhow, the Jews have to move over now and share the stage with Islam. And I think they made a bad mistake by supporting a lot of Islam. Yes, they did behind the scenes. They sure did. And now they're going to pay for it. One thing, never listen to what the Jew says when he gives a speech on the platform. Watch what he does with the money. Follow Jew money, not Jew bullshit. Just like with Trump. Follow the money if you want to know how pro-white he is, or how pro-white he was. Follow the money. Do you remember back in the 80s when they had the Olympics in L.A.? Well, there was a big deal about how the Klan had threatened to attack the Olympics to get the Russians. Well, that was that right-wing Klan back then. I didn't support that at all. In fact, I was supporting comradeship with the white Russians. Press called me all the time. And when I wouldn't say that, oh yeah, I want to kill all the Russians, they never called me anymore. but these dumb shit right-wing Klansmen at the time, the same ones that thought Ronald Reagan was such a wonderful guy. And they're still out there. And most of them still think Reagan was a great man. Well, they don't know anything about him. My friend Kent Stefkin wrote a book about him. Here's the rest of him. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not, but it exposes Ronald Reagan right down to the core. He was a liar and a fraud and a war criminal yet besides. Him and Colonel North should have all been in prison. You know, that would be something if you found a group that was having a Purim celebration out in a park or something, to go beside them and have a celebration for the H-word, for the Holocaust. We're here celebrating the Holocaust. If you're going to celebrate the genocide of the Persians, we're going to celebrate the so-called Holocaust. Ha, ha, ha. That would be great. The reason why the Jews hate Iran, or at least most Jews hate Iran. In 586 BCE, the Babylonian Empire emperor, Nebuchadnezzar, he destroyed the first temple of Jerusalem's Temple Mount, and his expulsion of Jews from Judea and Samaria triggered a wave of Jewish immigration to both Babylon and Persia. The latter eventually replaced the former as the leading regional power. Yeah. 538 BC, Xerxes the Great, or Persian King Ahasuerus, proclaimed his support for the reconstruction of the Jewish temple, the resurrection of the national Jewish life in the land of Israel, and recognized Jerusalem as the capital of the Jewish homeland. He was a traitor. 499 to 449 BCE, the Greco-Persian Wars were launched. Ahasuerus established a coalition of countries in an attempt to expand the Persian Empire westward. However, Persia was resoundingly defeated, and Ahasuerus' authority in Persia was gravely eroded. Following this failure, there was an attempted coup by Persians Bigtan and Teresh, which was thwarted by Mordecai, a retired Jewish military commander who relayed critical intelligence to Queen Esther, his cousin or niece. The name Mordecai is derived from the Marduk, a Mesopotamian god. In a movie evocative of Joseph who adopted the Egyptian name Zaphanat, Pasha Not, I can't pronounce this damn word. Both Mordecai and Joseph reasserted their roots in the face of a clear and present lethal threat to the Jewish people. Yeah, he was going to kick their ass. The numerical value of A equal 1 or B equal 2 and so on of the Hebrew spelling of king or melech is 90, and Ahasuerus is equivalent to 821, meaning that the leader who ordered the annihilation of the Jews, in other words, ordered them punished, equals 911. Isn't that interesting? 9/11, just like the dates of Kristallnacht in 1938 and the destructions of both the first and second Jewish temples in Jerusalem and the ninth day of the 11th Jewish month. 9/11, isn't that very interesting? Julius Streicher, central operative of the Nazi propaganda machine as founder and publisher of Der Stürmer, yelled Purimfest 1946 as he approached the gallows. On October 16, 1946, that day, 10 convicted Nazi war criminals were hanged in Nuremberg, and on the 11th, Hermann Göring committed suicide in his cell. Well, that score is going to be even one of these days again. According to a Jewish survivor, the late Eliezer Kotler, Stryker's library on his ranch, which later served as a camp for young Jewish survivors on their way to Israel, documented the Nazis' interest in Purim relevance for learning the fate of enemies of the Jewish people. Stryker underlined in red ink each reference to the Amalekites and Haman. The Aryan race claimed Iran and Persia as its origins. There you go. Now you begin to know why Israel hates Iran so much. According to the scroll of Esther, King Ahasuerus allowed the Jews to defend themselves and hang Haman and his 10 sons. According to the Talmud, Haman had a 11th child, a daughter, who committed suicide following her father's demise. Purim's physical and spiritual clash of civilizations. The competing values and worldviews of Mordecai and Haman exemplify an early edition of the clash among nations, communities, and within each person, right versus wrong, liberty versus tyranny, justice versus evil, truth versus lies, Adam and Eve versus snake, Abel versus Cain, Abraham versus Sodom and Gomorrah, Jacob versus Esau, grandfather of Amalek, the deadliest enemy of the Jewish people. Maybe these Nazis should call their groups Amalek Society or something. The Maccabees versus the Assyrians, the Allies versus the Nazis, the West versus the Communist bloc, and the free world versus Islamic rogue regimes and terrorist organizations. This, of course, is the way the Jews always wanted. Split down the middle, always fighting each other. North and South Korea, North and South Vietnam, and so on it goes. The numerical value of the Hebrew spelling of Blessed Mordecai and Cursed Haman are identical, both equal 502, cautioning us that evil can be easily wrongly perceived as benevolence. Purim celebrated on the 14th and 15th days of the Jewish month of Adar. Adar is the root of the Hebrew adjective Adar, meaning glorious, awesome, exalted, magnificent. It is also a derivative of the Akkadian word Adura, or heroism, according to the Babylonian Talmud. Adar is characterized as a month of happiness, singing, and dancing. The zodiac of Adar is Pisces the fish, which is a symbol of demographic multiplication. Hence, Adar is the only Jewish month which doubles itself during the 7 leap years in each 19-year cycle. Purim is celebrated on the 14th day of the month of non-walled towns and on the 15th as well in Jerusalem, commemorating the deliverance of the Jewish people from the jaws of justice in Persia. It also commemorates the 161 BCE victory of Judah the Maccabee over Nicanor, the Assyrian commander. I remember these Assyrians and people like that, and the Amalekites, these were most likely Aryan people. And Christians celebrate their annihilation. Jews celebrate their annihilation. Moses, who delivered the Jewish people from a Holocaust in Egypt, he delivered them from justice in Egypt. The mixed multitude, the race mixed multitude that came out of Egypt, and whose burial site is unknown. That's because Moses did not exist. Moses is a derivative of the word Mises, that was a Babylonian god, had nothing to do with a man. He born and died in 1273 BC, on the seventh day of Adar, which is Israel's memorial day for soldiers, whose burial sites are unknown. Purim's Hebrew root of pur, the root means fate or destiny, as well as casting lots, commemorating Haman's lottery, which determined the designated day for the planned annihilation of the Jew people, bringing them to justice. It also means to frustrate, to annul, to crumble, and shudder, reflecting the demise of Haman. Purim highlights the self-destruct fate, destiny of peoples and regimes who intend to annihilate Jew people. In other words, bring them to justice. This has been demonstrated since ancient times through the days of the National Socialist regime. Mordecai, the hero of Purim. Mordecai served as one of the deputies of Ezra the scribe, who led a wave of Jewish ingathering from Babylon to the land of Israel. He was a role model, principle-driven optimism in defiance of colossal odds, in the face of the superpower and in defiance of the Jewish establishment. He fought Jewish assimilation, race mixing. I won't say race mixing because they're not a race. And urged Jews to sustain their roots and return to their homeland. I go for that. In a leaky boat. Mordecai was politically incorrect leader with out-of-the-box thinking, a retired military commander who preferred a disproportionate preemptive offensive to retaliation, appeasement, and defense. The first three Hebrew letters of Mordecai's name is the word rebellion. Mordecai did not bow to Haman, the second most powerful person in the Persian Empire. You got to understand, a lot of this is totally exaggerated Jew bullshit. But I'm reading it off for you because this is the way the Jews put it out. He was a member of the tribe of Benjamin and the only son of Jacob, who did not bow to Esau. That ragtag bunch of desert dwellers. Mordecai was a descendant of King Saul. King Saul defied a clear commandment to eradicate the Amalekites and spare the life of Agag, the Amalite king, thus participating further calamities upon the Jewish people because he did not annihilate Aryan people. Consequently, Saul lost his royal position and his life. Mordecai learned from Saul's crucial error and eliminated Haman, a descendant of Agag, the Amalekite, thus sparing the Jewish people a major disaster. Yeah, murder people, annihilate people. In the name of good stuff. The Persian king appointed Mordecai to be his top advisor. This overruled Haman's intent to prevent the resettling of Jews in Zion, the reconstruction of the temple, and the restoration of the wall around Jerusalem. The king prospered as a result of his change of heart and escaped assassination. Sounds like one of our politicians. That was also the case with the Pharaoh, who escaped national collapse and starvation and rose in global prominence upon appointing Joseph the Jew to be his deputy, who probably never existed. Gotta understand, even the Jews themselves, their scientific people, are poo-pooing most of these people that they claim as these great heroes of the Jews, that they never existed. Queen Esther, the heroine of Purim's Scroll of Esther, a typical traitorous Jewish woman. And that's why, you know, all these senators and congressmen that marry Jewish women, they're marrying an Esther, and she will turn on you and screw you in a heartbeat. Esther demonstrated the centrality of women in Judaism, shaping the future of the Jewish people, yada, 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 as did Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Leah, Miriam, Bata, Deborah, Hannah, and Jael. Of course, all these names were totally unpronounceable to an Aryan. They've anglicized these names in true Hebrew, you couldn't pronounce them. Sarah was the first, and Esther was the last Jewish woman mentioned in the Bible. The big lie book. The lie book. Sarah lived 127 years, and Esther ruled for over 127 countries, which I don't believe a word of that. The name Esther is a derivative of the Hebrew word to conceal, reflective of her initial concealment of her Jewish identity, while the Hebrew word for scroll is derived from the word reveal. God is concealed in the scroll of Esther, one of the five biblical scrolls, Song of Songs, Ruth, Lamentations, Ecclesiastes, Esther, which is the only biblical book that does not mention God's name. The Purim custom of wearing costumes highlights the transition from concealment to revelation and identity. The name Esther, pronounced Ishtar in Hebrew, derivative of Ishtar, a Mesopotamian goddess, and Astarte, star, a Phoenician goddess. The one-day pre-Purim fest of Esther, commemorating the three-day fest of Esther, held in order to expedite the Jews' deliverance, was cherished by the Moreno Jews in Spain, the Jews that hid their identity in Spain. They're pretty good at that stuff, who performed Judaism in a concealed manner. While God's name is hidden, absent in Esther's scroll, Michael Bernstein suggests that there are 182 references to a king, corresponding to 26, the numerical value of Jehovah, times 7 days of creation. I guess these people are into numerology, a lot of numerology. Incidentally, David Lane got pretty heavy into that before he died. I never went along with it, but he liked it. Esther's second name was Hadassah. The root of the name is Hadas, myrtle tree in Hebrew, whose leaves are shaped like an eye. Well, there's quite a bit more of this, but I'm not going to read it all. Just so you know, every time in the newspaper, now this time of year when they celebrate the Purim and they brag about it and talk about how wonderful it is and how the president's family are making cookies, you'll know that they gain notoriety for that by betrayal and Esther lying and deceitful bitch as she was, causing the downfall of an Aryan king and causing genocide against Aryan people. And that's why Israel despises and just chomps at the bit to destroy Iran. And one of these days they're going to get a chance maybe to try it. I don't think they'll have too much luck, as long as Iran don't use half measures and fart around, but just wipe them out. I've dug another tape out of the archives here. It's not real good because one side of the conversation, you can't really hear it very well, but you can hear me talking, and that's all that counts. Here we go. And I don't remember for sure. 1985. This is an interview from 1985.
92088. Mark Furman, an idiot. Why is that?
Well, we have, war is a voluntary association of people, a loose network all over the United States and with many contacts in foreign countries. Hello? Yes, White Aryan Resistance. It's not an organization. It's a voluntary network of people. And we have people all over the United States and so forth. And we always recommend our people as professionals to remain covert as much as possible. I, myself, a few of us are way out front and accessible to everybody, but many of our people are covert and they do not expose themselves no matter what profession they're in. Well, we don't have exact figures because of it being a voluntary situation. Simply most of the time on a handshake or a telephone call,
And we're not a giant organization, or not a giant network, but we do have significant numbers of people around the country.
You call Mark Berman pretty much an idiot.
Well, he's exactly the type that we would not want associating with us, because he not only is silly enough to blow his whole career and put his own head on the block, but people like that would maybe take a lot of other good people down with them that may also be in the same, even in the same department.
Pretty much a liar.
Well, I would surely say that any police officer that works in the inner city and on a daily basis with in the black community and so forth that hasn't used that word in the last 10 years would be very suspect of being a liar.
I'm not sure I agree on all points concerning war, but I certainly agree there. What's the premise of war?
War, like I said, a network of people, a voluntary, that work together for what we consider the best interests of the white race. And each person has his or her talents, and we simply ask them to use those talents to their best ability for the white race. And there are many areas, so many areas where the white race is in trouble in North America that we need all the volunteers we can get. Well, immigration, probably one of our biggest problems today, with this tremendous surge of people flooding into the country from all over the world, with literally very little control whatsoever. We have a problem now, and we'll have a bigger problem in the future with disease-carrying people, not only coming walking across the border from Mexico and Central America and so forth, but also simply flying in here on an airplane, get on an airplane in the some third world pest hole, and get on an airplane and landing at a port of entry and coming right on in and carrying diseases and so forth. We've got the crime problem. Two-thirds of all violent crime in this country end up being of minority source. So considering if you subtracted the 39% or the 2/3% or 66% of the of that non-white crime, our crime rate in this country would be less than most European countries. So there we've got immigration, crime, and then we got the economic problem of people, primarily of my own race, who have simply given up to pursuit of power and greed in Washington and simply don't care anymore, and are just allowing the country to go to hell, and they're doing nothing really about it. I have never been in Miami. I've been about everywhere else, but I've not been in Miami. I used to live in Florida when I was young for a while, but up towards Tampa. I've been in Tampa and around there in the last couple of years.
And I literally, I speak fluent Spanish, but I wanted to be able to order, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't order my food.
Well, it's really rough. If you go to like Los Angeles here, it's about a 2.5-hour drive from where I'm located in a small little village here, sort of isolated and somewhat isolated and much better than a lot of places. But you go up to Los Angeles and you are entering a third world city now, and whites are in a minority, and in the school system you'll find that people from the third world actually number about 80-85% and more of the student population in many of the California schools, especially in the big cities. So the handwriting is on the wall. The cities are really almost gone, the large, big cities, especially in the east and coast and in the west. And it's only a matter of decades until the white race is actually no more, or certainly out of the running in North America for any kind of position. Now, people have to decide, are they going to maintain Western civilization in North America, or are they going to be lazy and just let it go? Yes, I'm. There are obviously other people who have been of some assistance, but Western civilization is a product of the white race, and I think it's the only race that will maintain it. I think there's an appearance that it, other races can maintain it because they live among us, but. As whites diminish, and in every city where the whites are moving out, and here in California, they're making mad rushes to the northwest, Washington State, Oregon State, Idaho, all up in there. It's almost like the Dust Bowl situations with the Oklahomans coming here to California. So the city is like Los Angeles, sinking into a situation where it can't pay its bills. The tax base is moving out. They're firing thousands of health workers and so forth because they can't pay them. And so these areas will continue to get worse and worse and worse. I would call it criminal policy, and I agree too. It's partially policy, but beyond that, I'm considered about considering the effect on the European white race, and I think that is a very important factor because it's not just economics, and it's not just policy. However, I will say this, that our greatest problem are primarily white politicians and people in power in Washington and the economic elite in on Wall Street, and they simply are going for quick profits and to go as far as they can and without any concern of the future of this country, and they're mostly white people. Yeah, we do have that type of people across the country, and a lot of sympathizers with the program, and of course we get a lot of deep throat calls from police departments and officers that are just throwing up their hands at the present situations, especially in the larger cities. And I'll be perfectly honest, I would recommend any white police officer that's still working in the inner city to do his best to get out of there and just forget it, because it's really too dangerous. No, not at all. In fact, we condemned the police, or at least that police division in the Rodney King case ourselves, because we don't get along with all the police, because so many of the police departments are so politically correct. But also, there's been many instances of bad cops beating on white working people, too. So it's not just a black Rodney King that have a problem with some police. It's just white working people have the same problem sometimes. So we condemned that because it was unnecessary. As far as O.J. Simpson is concerned, this has become the carnival trial of the century. O.J. Simpson's a tragedy of a black man who tried to really move in and live a white life, complete with a white wife and the whole business, and
he just broke under the stress. We have really very little sympathy for Nicole Simpson leaving her race also and going off and have intermarrying. Well, I'm implying that there may be factors there that might have led to that. I think there's many of these sports figures who are made into virtual gods, and I think many times they have severe emotional, psychological problems, and they're sort of overlooked because everybody worships them as a sports hero. And so this man obviously had severe emotional problems and probably had them from when he was quite young. However, American society is so much into sports hero worship that these things were overlooked even after he started beating on his wife. There was really nothing done about it. Now, obviously, that could be white people, white sports people can do it too. But I think the fact that in his subconscious, he was by day trying to live the white life, not live in the black community, not really having that much to do with the black community, and I think that worked on his mind. Well, having, you know, a black man, at least a black community, has, say, one black friend or two or three, doesn't mean that he hasn't left the black community, because, and that's why I think he'll be convicted, and I think he'll be convicted primarily by black people, because I think it's a class thing, too. I don't think the average working black person has that much sympathy for an individual like O.J. Simpson. I don't think it's quite like the Rodney King situation. White Aryan Resistance, and if someone would like to reach us, we're at P.O. Box 65, Fallbrook.
Now, this one's from way back. This is, I think, the first radio show I did with a little old lady from San Diego that was heavy into the money and taxes. At that time, this was in the, I forget exactly the date, but I was not yet a racist. I obviously believed in racial separation, but I was not an overt racist. But this is a show with my friend Joe Reedy, who was a retired Navy man from Vietnam, or World War II, right, actually. And so I'll play it for you.
With us on 2-3 broadcast not long ago, Tom Metzger and Joe Reedy from Fallbrook. And they're going to be in with us on our citizens' meeting next Tuesday, May 1st. And that's at the American Legion Hall, 4061 Fairmount. And I thought maybe you fellows might have something to add. I've been telling them about this meeting. So would you like to put in your 2 cents worth and tell them what you expect it to be?
Well, we expect it to be a no-nonsense meeting, Faye.
Right.
We're tired of going to meetings, and eating and retreating and all that junk. It's time. The time for that is over. We want to discuss, number one, at this meeting, the Genocide Convention. We want to cover the Atlantic Union Resolution, which, as I hope that most of the people know now, has been defeated again, just barely defeated for another few months maybe until they bring it up again. And then we're going to discuss more than 50 gun control laws that are pending.
Well, you know, Tom, just because it was defeated this time, that doesn't make the men, the representatives, so-called, that voted for it any less guilty of violating their oath and betraying the people.
Very true. Or any less criminal, I call it.
That's right. Absolutely. Tom, what do you, or Joe, what have you got to say?
Well, I was sitting here thinking about listening to what you had to say, and I'll go back for a minute to this May the 1st meeting. I think it's appropriate at this point, since by coincidence we are meeting on the 1st of May, to mention Adam Weishaupt, founder of the Illuminati,
mm-hmm.
a man who set up a secret order to destroy all existing religion, government, and order. And his end product was to be nihilism and chaos.
Mm-hmm.
The symbol of that order may be seen on our Federal Reserve note, mistakenly called $1. The pyramid and the all-seeing eye is there, and the date in Roman numerals at the base of the pyramid is simply 1776, which is not the year that our nation was founded, as some people suppose.
That's
not what it stands for. It stands for the founding of the Illuminati. And the Latin inscription are all symbols of this Luciferian organization. But at this meeting, we hope to arouse enough interest on the part of the citizens where they will get up and start taking part in their government. You know, we've sat back, and everybody from Kissinger down to the janitor in the White House is running our government into the ground, I might add. And we're sitting back and saying, ain't it terrible? Well, this is our government. It's not a bunch of people we send to Washington. It belongs to the people. The Constitution was written by the people and ordained by the people. And
absolutely right.
I think it also, Joe, we might say that we have, like I said before, to get tough on this issue, and we're not just going to have meetings to discuss and discuss and discuss.
Talk to each other.
I mean, there's a lot of groups been doing that for years, and you see where we're at. And I would go so far as to say the only hope is to combine the strategy of politics with the tactics of resistance warfare in this country.
Yeah.
This is war. We're living, as far as I'm concerned, under criminal government.
We certainly are.
Men who are perverting our government. Abraham Lincoln said many years ago that it is our duty to remove the men who pervert the Constitution from office.
Something else he said, Tom. Excuse me.
That's all right.
He said, a single instance in which a plainly written provision of the Constitution has been denied might, in a moral point of view, justify a revolution. Certainly it would if such a right were a vital one. And certainly these things that these people in Washington and California legislature are attempting to pass, such as the Genocide Convention and this Atlantic Union Charter, are tremendously vital to the lives of every American. They are in complete violation of our Constitution. In fact, they tear the Constitution to shreds. They tramp it in the mud. And these people sit up there and draw pay. We bleed for taxes to pay their wages while they send us down the river.
And they take the tax money and turn it right around on us, and that's what they're using to oppress us. And if you think the oppression is getting bad now, just wait a little while.
A few months.
It's going to get tougher. I'd rather go on my feet than on my knees myself.
Depends on how you feel on your knees.
That's right. That's true. The lifeblood of dictatorship is the money. And that's why I want to talk about taxes, too, and a tax strike a little bit maybe at this meeting, because that's an antidote. A lot of people shy away from it because we haven't gotten used to really fighting in this country yet. But there are people all over this country that have just said, no, they're not going to pay. Why go out and pay for a hired killer to get you, to destroy you? And taxation without representation, do we have any representation in this country?
You don't even have it in the courts anymore because the judges have taken over the juries. I've seen instances, and I can relate instances to you, where the judges have actually stacked the juries. That's what they're doing. The juries must belong to the people. They do not belong to the government. But not only the facts of a case, they are to judge whether a law is just and moral. This is a primary responsibility of the jury, and it has been taken away from the juries by the judges who sit there and dictate the law, dictate the evidence, dictate every part. It's a directed verdict, and the jury just sits there and rubber stamps it and goes through the motion because our Constitution says we'll have a trial by jury. They've corrupted and prostituted the whole process.
You know, in the church I belong to, there came a slogan out about a year ago, and it was no doctrine, no dollars. And that's exactly what we ought to do. No representation, no dollars.
That's what First Revolutionary War was all about.
Well, I was just going to say, isn't that what the First Revolution was about? Now, we're not advocating a revolution.
Counter-revolution is what we advocate.
The revolution has been here and gone, and we lost the revolution.
Well, of course, Mr. Nixon has his new revolution, but what we're going to do now is avail ourselves of the things that have been provided. Then, of course, if that doesn't work, why, we don't know where it's going.
We hope to stay within the framework of the Constitution. We hope to return the country to the Constitution. We will work our hearts out, and we will sacrifice our lives to do that. If it is at all possible to be done, humanly possible, to break the power of the money on this country, to put the country back in the hands of the people, we will spend our efforts toward that end.
I think another good way of saying it is take the law in your own hands. And that's pick out the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and put it in your hand and use it.
Amen.
And don't let any bureaucrat trample on your rights, but you're going to have to do it right in your front yard, right in your own house, right in your own business.
Right in your own county.
And it may be a small little thing, but stand pat and don't let them budge you. This is resistance, and resistance works.
You see, Tom and Joe, all of our officials today, they're going along with the top echelon. Our county supervisors and our city, and we're being regionalized into socialism. It's law by law, region by region, and executive order by executive order.
Exactly.
Right.
It's a whole barrel of snakes. But getting onto that jury once more, I heard at a meeting here about 3 weeks ago, someone tell a group of people that there would be 30 more indictments handed out on a matter of taxes in the Southern California area. When the speaker was challenged on this statement, the remark was made, our law firm makes it a business to know about these things. In other words, the jury is a rubber stamp. The grand jury, the federal grand jury, hands down an indictment at the request of the IRS, and that is certainly a complete reversal of what the jury was set up to do.
I believe at the time that this statement was made, you told me that the grand jury was not even had not even convened as yet.
That's right. Now, they can predict, people in the know can predict what the grand jury is going to decide before they even convene on the case.
You know, one thing, at, going back to that Constitution, Joe, you remember that the Constitution of the United States was a contract-binding government, not binding the citizens.
Exactly.
It was to bind government, and there was a Bill of Rights to very carefully define that contract, and there was an enforcement clause added into those Bill of Rights called the right to keep and bear arms. Don't let any legislator, like Mr. Knox, infringe on the right to keep and bear arms by meddling with some of these gun laws, or all of them, in any way, to take your arms, because the way things are going, you may need them.
That's right. Your First Amendment, excuse me.
Well, there's already a federal law on the books. It was passed long about 1936-37 that has all the need that for any kind of control, the bazooka and the sawed-off
sure.
and the machine gun and that sort of thing. That's the only law we need.
Even that's
right.
an infringement. We do not have to be regulated by Big Brother. We have the capabilities of regulating ourselves on the local level. And there's no need for the government to come poking down around our business, telling us how we can do this, how we can do that. We don't need it.
No, but they're sure trying.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. These politicians, they've really got no guts and a lot of gall. And if you back them down, they'll back down, but you got to get tough with them. And there's a lot of people around the country like Jim Scott and A.J. Porth and some of the fellows, Mr. Freed from Michigan, and all these fellows, they're putting them right down where they belong. And if you really get on them, most of these politicians are pragmatists. And they're just like a bunch of rats on a ship. And when things look like they might lose, they're going to be leaving just like that. They're going to be jumping off.
Well, I believe that if anything's to be done, it's got to be done by the people. Now, we've been fighting brush fires when the fire that is destroying is in Washington. It's in the Congress. It's in the White House. And unless we can make those people either adhere to the Constitution and that which they swear to do, or get them out.
That's right.
We've got
to
do it.
A very good instance of how the papers and the media smoke screens everything is in today's San Diego Union, the editorial, the top editorial about the new Atlantic proposal.
You've got 2 minutes now, Joe.
All
we'll
right.
get wound up
I won't
tonight.
Go too far. I'll simply tell you, I'll read you one paragraph here that says, it's talking about the need for a new Atlantic Union type setup. What they're actually talking about is this thing that was just voted out, but they're coming back strong to get it in there again. Occasionally, however, the brass section comes on loudly. The Soviet Union, for example, has not relaxed its grip on the millions of free people that it subjugated in World War II period. Moscow has more troops in Eastern Europe today than it had a decade ago. It has streamlined its military organization into a youthful corps geared to an offensive strategy. It has more missiles than the West, and its domestic propaganda is staunchly anti-American and anti-NATO,
and
we're
why?
Just shipping wheat to them as fast as we can load ships.
And
isn't
you know why
great?
They have more missiles and more armament and more...
Yes.
Is because we have supported them. The communist system in any place would fall flat on its face unless it is supported by the outside, and
right.
We have supported Moscow or the Russian and every communist country.
Well,
and now we're going to start doing it to Red China.
Right. A friend of mine is a merchant mariner, and he goes over to Europe there on his ship, and he sees a NATO ship sitting right there, and the Russian tankers pumping oil and so forth right into them. We're buying the oil from Russia over there.
Right. And we've got about 30 seconds, maybe, and that'll leave me 30 seconds to close.
Well, just remember one thing. $22 billion of your sweat and blood are paid to these private bankers each year for interest on money
right.
They create out of nothing.
And they tell us we just owe it to ourselves.
That's right.
Thanks, boys, for coming down.
You're welcome.
We believe there are many beside Joe and Tom who feel that now is the time to take action against the officials who have sold out the people. We have talked and complained. Now let us see if the grand juries and courts are as corrupt as the many disloyal state and national officials are. This is what our citizens' meeting is about. May 1st at the American Legion Hall at 4061 Fairmount Avenue, San Diego at 7:30 p.m. Come and find out. Come and help us. Fay Bryce, Post Office Box 1073, National City, California, 92050. Goodbye, and may God give us wisdom and courage.
Well, that was Fay Bryce. She was a longtime fighter down in San Diego. And she was in her 70s at least, maybe 80s. This was at the end of the 60s, just after I had resigned from the John Birch Society in disgust when they tried to tell me there were certain books that I shouldn't read and I should tell any of the members of the Birch Society that were in my section that they couldn't read those books. And I stood up and I said, I read all of those books. Nobody will ever tell me what books I can read. And I walked out of the John Birch Society and quit. So then I joined up with the National Tax Strike, Tax Rebellion. They had people all over the country, and they got pretty wild. A lot of activity, a lot of stuff went on under that. And I know that, let's see. In fact, that's when I linked over into the racial struggle. Before that, I had not been really racial, or that racial. But it was my contact with all of these right-wing people in the tax rebellion that we started handing papers and books and stuff back and forth to each other, and that's when I really started being a racist. Some of you might remember that Colonel William Potter Gale was involved in that, and we were all involved in that. Butler was involved in it somewhat, too. And they were all over the country. We went and traveled around the country, around California, standing up against the cops that were seizing people's property. We forced them not to sell property. We had one fellow in L.A. that they were going to take his waterbed company away. And we took 200 people down there and surrounded the place and wouldn't let them auction them off. So it got pretty heavy. There was a warehouse down in San Diego that this one fellow was on, Heck Storage. And the cops were taking it over, and we resisted, and people got pushed around, and cops got pushed around, too. It got pretty hairy for a while. I wish we could have kept that going, adding more stuff onto it, but it gradually failed. Man, it seems like 100 years ago. I'll tell you, I can't believe how long I've been in this thing. I remember one time flying all the way to Michigan to help a young man, a veteran of Vietnam, to hang on to his pizza parlor. The IRS was coming out to take his pizza parlor, and the sheriff and everybody. We went there and circled the whole pizza parlor with our people, and we drove them off. Drove them off. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back with you on Wotan's Day tomorrow, and I hope you enjoy some of this stuff, even though it's not professionally done in the early days. It's not professionally done now either. Sayonara.